by so majestically. You're my north, my south, my east, my west. Oh, well, you are the girl that I love best. Oh, well, an army of tanks bursting from your chest. I wave my little white flag at thee. Well, can you see it, babe? Turn the mirrors to the wall, and I've emptied out the people halls. And I've nailed shut the windows and I've locked the doors. There is no escape, you see. And I chase you up and down the stairs. Well, under tables and over chairs. Well, I reach out and I touch your hair, but it cuts me like a knife. For there is always some little thing you've got to do. Hey! Supernatural on me, supernatural.
I wanted to, because What?
Start again.
All right. Many thanks for your... Sorry, I'm going to have to start again, apparently. Dear Pete, many thanks for your incredibly long and funny letter. It left me chuckling for a few days after. And let's face it, bro, laughter is good medicine. You pointed out that your EDR is narrowed in sight and that you're on up in front of the parole board again soon. Good luck with that, Pete. We all eagerly anticipate the party we're going to have when you're back in town. Lucy is okay despite her health problems. Rachel and Joe are doing a marvellous job of looking after her. You asked me what changes there are, if any, in society, so you can prepare yourself. Well, there's not much to report. All the money's still the same size and shape as when you went away, as when you last saw some. Only you'll probably be staggered by how expensive everything is and how little far it goes, the dough that is. But surely one of the most instantly recognisable differences would be the plague-level proliferation of personal communication devices. The fact that this fetish with the mobile phone is so noticeable is because users are still required to wield these devices in a showy and ostentatious manner, in keeping with the vagaries of signal reception and the limited availability of hands-free technology. The mobile phone has been wholeheartedly embraced with the same kind of fervour that greeted the inception of the digital watch 30 years ago. Even the most sedentary citizen must have observed the exponential growth of these, at one time ungainly and unglamorous, but now sleek and invisible contraptions. These devices are everywhere. They have become ubiquitous. They encompass the full range of social classes, ages, sexes and occupations. Even, it seems, people who have nothing worthwhile to impart or any friends to impart it to be witnessed in joyful communion on high streets up and down the country. Not just Britain, it is a worldwide phenomenon. Truly ubiquitous, inherently ubiquitous. Like all new innovations, they are largely superfluous to your needs. Your wants, on the other hand, are another matter. How do I know that they are superfluous? I'm alive. The civilization I'm struggling to be part of has got this far without them. The purchase creates the need to use, and initial use compounds the problem, as the need to update, obtain services and retool becomes a necessary concomitant of use. These technological invasions of my peaceful serenity are anathema to a Luddite like myself. I'm not saying there is no occasion when their use would not be welcomed. All new innovations have their advantages. The inventor of the lowly savoury snack, the pretzel, probably never dreamt that his humble creation would one day gain international notoriety as the expediter of 1,000 Taliban fantasies and nearly choke George W. Bush to death. Personally, I would have strangled a cunt with a curly-whirly or a licorice bootlace, such as the level of ire and antagonism I project on that motherfucker. But enough of my mordant scorn. Of course, mobile phones have their advantages. I'm not going to waste my time tabulating them. That would be fatuous and not in any way cathartic for me, as I hate the fucking things. Let's just say they're useful in a genuine emergency, although you could try telling that to a Russian submariner. You know how it is, you're dangling from a precipice by your fingertips, you free a hand and dial Scott Tracy's number, and hey presto, before you know it, you're winging your way through the stratosphere courtesy of Thunderbird 1 at international rescue expense. Yeah, right. Most people have never had a genuine emergency, and probably never will have. Although owning a mobile phone can increase your chances of having a genuine emergency. Unfortunately, it's usually the kind that involves a crack-smoking 16-year-old and a sharp blade. What use is your mobile phone to you then? You've just been plunged, and you've got to stagger to the nearest phone box or find another mobile phone user prepared to let you borrow his. And you know what the chances of that are. Because mobile phone users would rather talk to someone they know but can't see than engage in a direct conversation with a stranger, especially one that's covered in claret. Why? Because they're pricks. Yes, these disadvantages of mobile phone ownership are numerous and a good deal more interesting to list. Number one. Fact, you're much more likely to be a victim of a street robbery if you use your phone in the street. Considering this is what they were designed for, that's a bit of a bummer and hardly a comforting thought. Number two, when I go out for a reason. I do not particularly want to talk to people. I would have rung before I left if I did. Mobile phone lovers out there will always point out to the fact that you have the ability to switch off your mobile phone. Is that really a fact? Number three, statistics show that most mobile phone users not mortally wounded in street robberies are likely to be hunted down and slain by other mobile phone users irate because they cannot connect with their like-minded friends because they have turned their phones off. So think carefully before exercising your choice. It may be the last choice you ever make.
Number four, they actively multiply a user's feelings of isolation by reducing actual human contact and replacing it with a squeaky electronic disembodied voice. If that isn't sinister, then I don't know what is. That's a lie. Of course I know what sinister is. The commodification of speech is fucking sinister. Unnecessary speech at that. How many vital conversations actually take place? The moral imperative is to answer a ringing telephone, and this guarantees an endless drain on your capital assets. Static line conversations tend to have more duration and purpose. Most mobile phone conversations are around the sub 2 minute mark, nominally due to the high tariffs, but also indicative of the facile nature of the discourse. This is the insidious nature of mobile phones that most annoys me. It grieves me that people are stupid enough to have something that was once perfectly free, and that you had a degree of control over, wrested from them, and can now be purchased at either cheap, standard, or fucking extortionate rates. What next? Bottles of air? I can imagine the advertising slogan. Without air, you'd go purple and die, so fucking buy it, you docile bovine scum. Such is the contempt the corporations have for us. Maybe that's why they're so busy polluting the atmosphere, creating a truly dependent market with ultimate consumer brand loyalty. Air. Without it, you'd die. Only $5.99 a litre. Number six. Another potentially fatal aspect of mobiles is that they're totally incompatible with use while driving. Hands-free kit or not, you start blathering shite on the highway and your risk factor increases significantly. Whilst on the subject of detrimental health effects, how about radioactivity? Admit it, if somebody asked you to walk around all day with 0.75 milligrams of uranium in your ear, you'd laugh. But if they encased it in a sleek plastic canister and gave you 20 buttons to press and a variety of obnoxious tunes it can play, you'd buy it, you sad cunt. All those Big Brother text updates lighting up your synapses like a malignant Christmas tree. Nice. How do you like those apples, eh? Number eight, musical ringtones. Let's get one thing perfectly straight. Mobile phone ringtones are in no way, shape or form ever to be confused with music. They are neither melodic nor harmonic. What they are is 300 different varieties of aggravation. The theme tune to Hawaii Five-O is in no way enhanced when simulated on a machine that plays the same note over and over again with only the pitch of the note altering. It does not create an air of mystique to your persona. It does not imply or confer panache or style. It simply says that there is no limit to your imagination when it comes to how much of a wanker you want to appear in public. Number nine, texting. What the fuck is that all about? An incomplete, illiterate series of abbreviations. It takes you all day to decipher. Very popular with people who are possessive over their partners. I text you, therefore I love you. Now you must text me back to prove you love me as much. Christ on a bike, some marketing guru somewhere must be wetting his knickers in anticipation of his next bank statement. Another contrivance to create the necessity for needless communiques. Number 10. But for sheer unbridled annoyance, the single most distressing quality is the unashamed arrogance of the mobile phone user in relation to those of us who prefer to communicate face to face. Here's a familiar scenario. It's Friday evening, you've travelled across town to meet a pal after work for a few pints and a friendly game of pool, etc. You sense you're in trouble when your friend meanders into the pub in that all too familiar swagger indicative of someone dispatching a text message to somebody, probably a girlfriend. You just know it's some obsequious message of misguided affection. Eventually he gets his drink and comes over to you. You greet him and a conversation develops. You begin to broach a subject that only this particular friend is qualified to advise on. Let's pretend that it's a delicate matter that's been bugging you all day. You just get into the nitty-gritty when the theme from Mission Impossible starts emanating from his breast pocket. His reaction is immediate and instinctive, and suddenly you are left floundering, cut off in mid-bleat, while he attends to his portable device. This is important work, you know. He doesn't wait for your reply. He's off, racketing shite like a self-obsessed cockboy that he is. This type of thing turns my blood black. I'm now incensed, stressed to the max, scrambling for my anger management coping strategies. This guy's lucky to be alive and should thank the exponents of cognitive skills techniques for his safe passage through the night. His decision to answer the phone was instinctual, because it was a simple equation for his mind to solve. He wants his phone to ring in public because he's ego-obsessed. He believes that it confers status and importance upon him. Someone is paying for the privilege of talking with me, whereas I am actually engaged in a conversation. It's no contest in his mind. The customer, in this instance the caller, is always right. One person cut off and the other is connected. All due to a contrived conversation priority league table in his mind. What a wanker. Sorry, got a bit polemical on you there, pal. But I thought I'd better clear you up prior to your release. I just know it'll drive you as potty as it does me. No doubt we'll all succumb to the fad, as the more folk you have a phone increases the pressure to obtain one if you're one of the dwindling few who've thus far managed to resist such sad accessorisation. Anyway, hope I've given you some light relief with my thoughts on the subject. Stay strong, Pedro. I remain your pal, Randall. P.S. If you see that cunt Gary Glitter, give him a dig for me. Do you want to be in my gang? Bloody nerve or what? Right, well, that was the end of the letter that Randall sent to me, and it did the job, you know. It kept me buoyant for a few more weeks, and that was all that mattered at the time. So the rest of the show I'm just going to like whack a load of tunes on now, sort of from kind of, I don't know, some dance music from the sort of late 80s, early 90s, some tunes that Kate sent me on a CD, and a tune for Biffa and Jamie, who came all the way down from Manchester. They missed the funeral, but they came down on Sunday. And unfortunately, we missed them because we were over in Lewis at Rendell's flat. But we're going to play a tune for them. And a big shout out to Jeff and Lindsay and Erica and Freddie and all the London crew. And to Kate up in Cambridge and Helen and Mark and anyone else who I've forgotten to list. Whatever. Anyway, I'm going to play a tune. And this is Cop Shoot Cop, and it's called It Only Hurts When I Breathe. Bollocks, apparently the first part of the show, you might have been hearing music, but I was actually talking as well at some point, and apparently that didn't come off or come out because I wasn't, I was using the wrong button to turn the microphone on, and I'm a sad wanker I am. Shit, I just dropped that thing there. So anyway, basically to repeat, the show is dedicated to my pal Randall, who unfortunately passed away a few weeks ago, and I just read out a letter that he wrote to me years ago. And for the rest of the show, some 30 tunes dedicated to his memory. But you heard that because I said that before I played this record. What you didn't hear was some other stuff that I said before, and I might be worth me reading that out again. Yeah, what I said was that Randall was larger than life in many ways, and one of the conundrums surrounding him perplexed me immensely. Was why did someone who was capable of such love and generosity continually seek escape in drugs and alcohol? It was like he'd earn your respect, love and approval, and then get totally banjacked and fuck it all up. This conundrum, I reckon, is the reason we all loved him so much, because we knew it couldn't last. One could never imagine Randall being much good in a Zimmer frame. Randall had an aura and an energy that imbued the folk around him with feelings of well-being, and this enabled those around him to fulfil their ambitions. Randall was a great motivator and supporter of the individual, and many of us have sought the benefit of his insight and wisdom, or had it thrust upon us over the years. We can only hope that he is now at rest in some distant paradise, shooting the breeze with Hendrix, Strummer and Peel. He touched the lives of a lot of folk wherever he went, be it Hackney, Brighton, Hebden Bridge or Lewes, and those of us fortunate enough to have met him will always have a place for him in our hearts. And that's basically all you missed, I think. Because you've got the music. So, do you know where I've got that thing? I just had something in my hand which I left here last month, part of my Sony Walkman thing, and I just dropped it, and that's what I'm gathering back. So anyway, I'm going to play another tune. Is that queued up? And you got record. This is, what is it? Voodoo Ray. It's from the very early days of the Acid House music, when Dancing with the Eagle, and, but free. So anyway, this is it. Are we queued up? We've done all that.
Refuse a trip.
Countdown is progressing.
Biffer and Jamie, who are fucking sterling effort, lads. I mean, all the way down from wherever the fuck you live, up there in Lancashire or something. Somewhere wild and woolly like that. So, here's a tune, especially for you guys. And, yeah, love and peace and respect to you both.
Yeah.
See you all next month.